This is Embodied, our space for conversations about sex, relationships, and your health. I'm Anita Rao. Most of us grow up with the idea that a romantic relationship involves two people, and when others get involved, it is a bad thing. But that one-partner-fits-all model does not work for everyone. Polyamorous relationships look as different as the people they involve, but they all take some learning and unlearning of our standard relationship structures.
So you never know how people are going to take things like this, especially when you're saying, I'm trying to say to you, I'm not having an affair. And they're going, yes, it is. That's what it is.
Here to help me do some of that learning and unlearning today is Crystal Bird Farmer. Crystal is an educator, organizer, and the website editor of Black and Poly magazine. Crystal, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Rob, a co-organizer of the Triangle Polyamory Meetup. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hi.
So, Crystal, I'd love to start with you. You identify as solo polyamorous. Tell me a bit about what that means to you.
Yeah, so when most people think of polyamory, they think of maybe a couple or maybe three people who are involved in a relationship all together. They're living together, they're sharing finances and childcare and all of that thing. As a solo polyamorous, I live alone. I live with my daughter. I still have committed long-term relationships, but I'm not sharing finances, I'm not sharing housing, I'm not nested with somebody.
You did a great job there at the beginning, even introducing us to what we're going to continue to unpack throughout the show, which is that there are so many forms that polyamory takes, so many forms that ethical non-monogamy takes. But I'd love to start us off with just some definitions to give people a sense of what we're talking about. So maybe let's start with these terms, consensual non-monogamy and ethical non-monogamy. What are those and how do they relate to polyamory?
Yeah, so those are thought of as the umbrella for whatever is what we do. So consensual and ethical non-monogamy are very similar. The ethical part is that unlike some traditional polygamous relationships, marriages of children and things like that, the consensual and ethical part is that we are doing this with the full consent of everyone involved. We're not lying. We're making sure that people are actually wanting to do this and not just being forced into it because of their culture or their religion. So that's what ethical and consensual mean. The non-monogamous part means that, you know, not everybody is polyamorous. So polyamory is one part of underneath that umbrella. You can put swinging under that. Those are mostly sexual relationships. You can put polygamy and polygyny under that. Those are marriages where you have multiple spouses.
Okay, that's super helpful. And is there something specific that does define polyamory that does make it distinct from these other characteristics or these other types of relationships, like an open relationship, for example?
Yeah, so polyamory is considered to be romantic and sexual relationships. So people who are polyamorous are, they may not be marrying everybody that they're in a relationship with, but they're usually involved sexually or romantically and or romantically with them. Whereas open relationships are usually there's a core couple and they may be having sex with other people outside the marriage, but they're still kind of focusing on that marriage part of it. So that's the difference between open and polyamory. And then polyamory, a lot of people consider, you know, it doesn't have to be romantic. It doesn't have to be sexual, but these are committed relationships that I'm making with people.
So, Rob, you are the co-organizer of the Triangle Polyamory Meetup. Tell me a bit about when pursuing non-monogamy first became of interest to you.
Oh, probably before I was old enough to actually have a relationship, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
I always just imagined myself in a situation where I never had to be tied down to one person. And when I got in my 20s, I tried to do that because it was expected, but it was always a complete failure, to say the least. And so over time, I, you know, dabbed my toes in the waters of different types of non-monogamy. I would say in the beginning, it was the typical open relationship format where you had one person, but, you know, each of us agreed to do things, quote unquote, outside, you know, with permission, you know, of each other. And that was great too, but eventually, somewhere in my mid-30s, I'd say that I actually said, if I could have sex with more than one person, why can't I love more than one person? And that's when I probably transitioned into a more of a polyamorous mindset. And at that point, I kind of found the local polyamory community, Triangle Polyamory. Back then, it wasn't a meetup. It was listservs. They didn't have meetup yet, but I met people who taught me about what it was like to have more than one partner or more than one boyfriend or more than one girlfriend, so forth. And it just kind of, it was like, well, this just makes more sense, you know.
So you bring up really early something that I'd love to keep unpacking with you both throughout the conversation, which is this distinction between relationships that are all about sex and relationships that are about love and relationships that are somewhere of a hybrid in between. And it seems to me, Crystal, that when we hear about polyamory, kind of in cultural conversations, there's so much focus on the sex part of it, and that being kind of the central thing guiding people who want to choose to have multiple relationships. But for a lot of folks, that really isn't what gets them into it. Talk to me a bit more about sex and kind of the focus on sex in cultural conversations that you see.
I just want to recognize that not every polyamorous person is having sex. A lot of us are on the LGBTQ plus spectrum, so there are lots of people who, have asexual relationships or demisexual, which is kind of like a in between. But yeah, so I think sex is titillating. It's what people are really they don't like to talk, they don't want to talk about, but they really like to hear about. And so that's why when you think of polyamory or when it's portrayed in the media, it's a lot about the sexual element of it. And yeah, I have sex with my partners, and so that's part of my relationships. But yeah, polyamory is not focusing on that. It's actually about making agreements and setting boundaries and having the type of relationship that you want with people in an honest and ethical way.
We heard from a listener named Matt who shared one of the misconceptions that folks have about him and his polyamorous relationships. Let's listen.
It's not a situation where you're collecting people. This is not, G.I. Joe, Transformers, baseball cards. If you find someone that you might explore a relationship with, you have that dialogue. I had a guy I started talking to online who developed feelings for me, and his approach was, "Well, you're in a polyamorous relationship. Why can't you date me?" And I told him, it's like, dude, I don't have the emotional resiliency right now to start another relationship, and I'm not looking for another relationship. I understand that you want a relationship, but this is a two-person thing. You have to want it. I have to want it. And I think that's kind of one of the big stereotypes of polyamory. It is not this on-demand sexual circus where if you want to smash, you point to one or you point to both and you go upstairs and smash away, like any other kind of relationship. Once you've gone through the nesting phase and you settle into normalcy, the together time is a lot more important than the sex time.
That was a listener, Matt, in Holly Springs. He uses so many good metaphors in that short clip. And Rob, I'd love to get a reaction from you. Is there anything that Matt says that resonates with your experience?
Oh yeah. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if I know him. Because yeah, I've heard those comments before in my circles of friends, and yeah, there is this idea that it's like, oh, I have a drawer of boyfriends I collect. It's not like that, really. But I mean, yes, as Crystal mentioned, ethical non-monogamy is an umbrella, and it can include open relationships, swinging, polyamory, and everything. And yes, sometimes, depending on the type of non-monogamy, sometimes a person picks, yeah, it can be about the sex. And that's perfectly acceptable, And I think the interesting thing is there is like this gray area where people will kind of morph into like, I want polyamory, but I also want, the advantages of other types of non-monogamy. And there is some crisscross. But yeah, he mentioned some of the stereotypes that it is just about the sex and just about collecting as many partners as possible. And it is certainly not. There's only so many hours in a week that you can fit into putting people in your life. I did stretch myself thin at one point trying to date too many people at the same time, and I don't recommend doing that. You have to keep yourself as your primary focus and try to, maintain a safe pace before you're stretched too thin.
We're going to continue talking more about that just ahead, especially, what communication looks like and how you navigate consent and boundaries within polyamorous relationships. All of that on Embodied just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to us from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is Embodied, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Anyone who thinks being in a relationship is easy, please share your secrets. Relationships take work, and we ask for a lot from our partners: trust, communication, commitment, fidelity. But what do those words actually mean?
To someone, fidelity might be like, don't sleep with anybody else. But like, fidelity could mean sleep with whoever you want, but like, don't watch Schitt's Creek without me. Like, that's equally valuable and like allowed.
Today, we are exploring what it means to be polyamorous and what being in multiple relationships teaches us about ourselves and our loved ones. Crystal Bird Farmer, website editor of Black and Poly Magazine, is with us. Also is Rob, co-organizer of the Triangle Polyamory Meetup, and Natalie Murray, a licensed clinical mental health counselor who specializes in sex therapy, relationships, and couples counseling. Natalie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anita. Thanks for having me.
And we also encourage you all who are listening to add your voice to the Embodied Conversation at EmbodiedWUNC on Twitter and Instagram. So, Natalie, I'd love to know for you, before you started working with folks who were polyamorous, were there some assumptions and beliefs that you had to confront in yourself about what polyamory is and what those relationships look like?
Not really. I've always been around quite a few people in my, inner circle, outer circle, that had alternative relationships. So I was very familiar going in, which is why I decided that any type of alternative relationship was also going to be my focus in my practice.
So tell me about why you chose that focus and how it orients the kind of work that you do.
Well, I think the thing is that I am a big believer in being able to make your relationship unique to you. I think a lot of people come into relationships with a general idea of what a relationship is or is supposed to look like. That could be their relationship role models they had as children and teens and young adults. So it became necessary for me, for people who were exploring different types of relationships, to really have a safe place to find out about them, work through them, and just to kind of affirm, hey, it's okay to have a relationship that looks different than anybody else's relationship.
Yeah, that reminds me of a listener we heard from, and I want to play a quick clip of our conversation with her. She and her spouse decided to open up their relationship after a decades-long marriage, and she shared a bit about that experience with us.
When I first got back together with my friend, we both agreed, absolutely without any qualifications, that neither one of us had any interest in ending our marriages. We absolutely both love our mates. And we've really been monogamous for the majority of our marriage. But when I got back together with this old friend, it sort of started to open up my psyche a bit about who I am and what I am and what I care about. And I think the being older part is part of that, is that you get to a place in your life where you realize there isn't going to be that much more going on. And so that's why I feel like this falls into the category of polyamory, because we have no interest in changing our current relationships other than to make it better. That everything is, kind of based on a sense of responsibility and a sense of honesty.
That is a listener who wished to remain anonymous, sharing her story with us. I have with me Rob, a co-organizer of the Triangle Polyamory Meetup, Crystal Bird Farmer, website editor of Black and Poly Magazine, as well as therapist Natalie Murray. So, Rob, this listener describes a relationship structure where everything is based on a sense of responsibility and honesty. And those are the grounding tenets of polyamorous relationships, but each person kind of sets up their own relationship dynamic differently. Tell us a bit about your relationship dynamic right now at this point in your life.
One of the first lessons I learned from poly leaders in the local community was there is many different ways to do polyamory as there are people doing it. And you're right, there's different formats. For me right now, I have two partners, one of which I live with and one of which lives with his spouse. And this is a long-term relationship that I've got going on. I call it open poly because we all agree that we have a little bit of autonomy as far as who else we see. We keep things open and honest and transparent, but it's not like we have to, you know, get anyone's approval, so to speak. We believe in each person being their own individual and responsible for themselves. And you just remain honest, and we each have our own relationships as we go along. And I've had more partners than two. I've dated three or four before. Pandemic definitely puts a little bit of a damper on polyamory, as you can probably imagine. So right now it's just a matter of maintaining what you got. But I incorporate pretty much the principles of both polyamory and just good old fashioned open relationships, as I call it, into my life. So we kind of incorporate the two together.
Well, you mentioned here this idea of, you know, honesty and open communication. And Crystal, I mean, I think one of the things that comes up a lot in terms of conversations about polyamory for people who are curious about it or think about it is jealousy is the kind of assumption that how would you not get jealous if your partner had another lover or if you were sharing your partner's time with other people. Could you talk a bit about jealousy and your thoughts about it within the context of your own life?
Yeah, so jealousy is a natural feeling, you know, it's saying that there's something that you want that you don't have. And I think a misconception would be that polyamorous people never get jealous. We do get jealous. We just acknowledge it as a feeling, and it's not something that means we have to suddenly change our relationship or put new rules on it. It's something that we have to talk through and possibly renegotiate. So I don't get super jealous with my partners. There are, you know, my partners have other partners and they get different things, get different needs met. So, you know, if I'm feeling jealous, then that's time for me to think and say, okay, what is there that I'm not getting? Is there something that I see my partner giving to someone else that I would like to receive? Or is it just that I'm just kind of like envious of, you know, how much money they're spending on them or that they have a nice house or whatever? So, you know, if I'm feeling jealous, it'll be a lot of reflection within myself. And then I can go to my partner and say, hey, you know, I would like to spend more time with you. Can we, you know, start doing 2 days a week instead of 1 day a week? And then my partner can say yes or no. And that's, you know, that's how we work our relationships.
I mean, it's interesting because it brings up to me, Natalie, I mean, we have such limited language for talking about relationships. We have these kind of ideas of, you know, commitment and fidelity. But as we've alluded to already in this conversation, those terms can mean different things to different people. So when you're working with a couple, how do you help them kind of establish a sense of ethics for the context of their relationship and terms that they can all agree upon and feel good about and navigate those changes when things change?
Well, one thing with couples and especially poly couples is that boundaries are key. And I always stress that people need written boundaries and understand that those boundaries may or may not change depending on what comes up. Like Crystal was saying, jealousy is natural, it's normal, it's human, And I think when couples are establishing a poly relationship, like I get some couples that are coming in because they're curious about it. They want information. I also have couples who have been in poly relationships for years. So it's one of those things where you kind of talk about your boundaries, what you want it to look like, what the other person wants it to look like, you know, understanding that I think there is a perception that people who are in any type of alternative relationship are above certain feelings and emotions. Mm. So I will sometimes have people who come in and are like, I'm not supposed to be jealous. Like, I agree to this. And I'm like, but you're human. So, you know, you have a feeling, like Crystal was saying, maybe, you know, two times a week instead of one. So written boundaries are key for communication and also letting couples know that you will communicate in a trio, a quad, your polycube, however you decide to name it, you will communicate constantly. You will do check-ins to make sure that everybody's okay, that something has not come up that can cause any friction in the group, and that people feel like it's a safe space to really talk about their emotions and feelings and things that are just coming up for them.
Yeah. I mean, Rob, it seems obviously communication is key in any relationship, but when you are navigating, you know, multiple people's feelings at once, which I guess we're all doing, depending on our relationship choice. But I mean, are there examples that you have of mistakes that you've made of communicating in poly relationships and lessons you've learned along the way about boundary setting for yourself?
Well, to go back on, you know, the topic of jealousy, I think one thing that's important to mention is that there seems to be a large number of people who get jealousy and envy confused. Mm. And I have found that whenever I hear at some of the local meetups, when someone starts talking about, I'm struggling with polyamory because of jealousy, and I do some follow-up questions, 2 out of 3 times, what they're really dealing with is envy. Because jealousy is actually a multifaceted amount of feeling where you're incorporating fear and insecurity. And envy is just a simple lack of needs being met. Hmm. And when you improve your communication, you can usually cancel out any problems from envy. If you say, hey, I feel like you have spent more time with your new boyfriend this month than you have with me. Can we, you know, try to make up the difference with some quality time? And, you know, if you have a reasonable partner, he or she will say, yeah, that's a good point. Let's work on that. And you could fix envy pretty easily. Whereas jealousy definitely has this whole insecurity feeling wrapped up into it. And I think that's the most common mistake I've seen with a lot of poly people, especially when they're new to it. My mistakes, you know, were in the early days of trying this, you know, were somewhat along those lines as well. I got those two feelings confused, and I still to this day have to deal with envy in my relationships but fortunately I'm able to prevent jealousy because I keep reminding myself, you know, you got to take care of if you're feeling insecure, it says more about yourself than it does the other person. And so you have to look in the mirror more than you need to look at your other partner if you're feeling that way. You know, as far as boundaries go, that's another good topic, because I think a lot of people who are in poly, they'll say, we're going to make some rules in our relationship. But I say, no, you got to make agreements based on your boundaries. And if you don't talk about your boundaries in your own personal comfort zones first, then you'll never be able to have a good relationship agreement.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we're kind of circling around so many concepts that exist in all relationships. And one of those is consent. And Crystal, you have a really beautiful, I think, framework for thinking about consent within the context of relationships. And I'd love for you to explain that to us, the triangle, the consent triangle.
Yeah, so I wrote a post a couple years ago, and it's called The Triangle of Consent. And is really to address the idea that, you know, consent is more than just saying yes. It involves these different factors. It involves the power that somebody has. It involves the privilege. It involves the knowledge that other people have. So it's really important when you're negotiating consent, as we call it, when you're entering into a relationship to have a full conversation about what your expectations are, and then to acknowledge that there may be power differentials. So in heterosexual relationships, we think that, you know, there can be power differences between the man and the woman. You know, if a man is typically used to acting a certain way and the woman is used to being demurring and to, you know, being less aggressive, you know, there may be some kind of cultural things that you have to get over and you have to acknowledge before you enter into a relationship. So that's my triangle.
I want to play a clip from a listener we spoke with named Hannah, who has some advice or thoughts for folks entering into polyamorous relationships. Let's listen.
Ethical non-monogamy does not mean that like every single thing you do has to be perfect or you can't backtrack. That's allowed. When my nesting partner Joe and I first became non-monogamous, one of our guidelines was like, either of us can like veto non-monogamy at any time and be like, okay, let's take a minute to like be monogamous. And that actually was really helpful because we sort of had like a parachute if we were getting scared or we needed attention, we could just be like, let's have a second. Eventually, though, because we kept working and kept exploring and it did end up being the right thing for us, now we've talked about it and we're like, oh no, like if one of us went to the other and said, I want to be monogamous, then our relationship would probably end because neither of us see monogamy in our future.
That is a listener named Hannah, and we're talking about polyamory today. Natalie, mental health counselor, I'm curious if you hear anything in Hannah's clip that reminds you of folks that you've worked with. Are there people who decide to enter poly relationships and then at some point are confronted with the, I guess, realization or questions about whether this was the right choice? And how do you help people navigate that?
I hear that quite often, actually. And one of the things that I try to do is make sure that my couples know they have permission to do what is right for them. So sometimes when people have done their research, they, you know, have decided that this is the right relationship structure for them, they have a hard time dealing with it not working. And they feel like, I've committed to this process. You know, this is what we said we're going to do. We can't change it. And I tell people, you can always change your relationship structure at any time. You know, I have some couples who are open at different times of the year and they're closed the rest. Hmm. Or they're open only to, you know, certain people. And you are allowed to structure your relationship in a way that works just for you. So one of the things, again, with all the communication that has to happen is also examining your beliefs, and people change. So I have some people that may enter a poly relationship in their 20s, and in their 40s, their beliefs have changed about what they want and what the relationship structure means to them. And I let them know, it's okay. It's okay to say that to your partner. It's okay to say, well, this is what I thought, and now this is what I think. And I would like to change it up a little bit. But definitely giving people that platform, that security to know that it doesn't mean you failed at poly. It doesn't mean that, you know, you don't believe in it anymore. It's just that sometimes people decide, well, this is not for me anymore. So, you know, I can change it if I want to.
Yeah. Natalie, I'm sorry, Crystal, I know that you were in an open marriage before and now you identify as solo poly. But does this resonate with you, kind of the giving yourself permission to, at different points in your life, reevaluate and figure out the relationship structure that you want for that moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So people change, you know, throughout your life. There are different things you want. You know, a lot of people, they pretend that marriage means that they're going to be together forever. But we know in the U.S., you know, people divorce. So there shouldn't be an expectation when you do polyamory that you're going to, you know, have these lifelong relationships. Polyamory actually gives you the ability to say, hey, you know, I have really enjoyed this, but I want something else now. And for that to be, you know, an ending that's positive instead of a, you know, this kind of dramatic blow up, you know, fighting end of marriage thing. So it's really good that that for me, you know, I can say to my partners, hey, I'm feeling things change. There's one thing that I do at the beginning of relationships, and it's called new relationship energy. When you're like super excited about a new person, And you want to see them all the time, have sex all the time, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I tell people, you know, if we're new at this, I'm going to have all these irrational feelings. And that's called the honeymoon period, new relationship energy. And it's going to end, you know, and then I might be, I'm going to be the same person, but I might want to see less or do different things. And so, you know, for me to be able to say that to them gives them the knowledge and gives them, you know, the power to say, hey, you know, you're coming on too strong. This is too much. Or, you know, I really like this. And when that's over, I'm done too. So, you know, we can kind of communicate about what we want and what happens when things change.
All right. We're going to continue our conversation after a quick break. Stay with us for more about polyamory. This is Embodied. I'm Anita Rao. We will return to our conversation about polyamory in just a minute, but I would like to quickly open up our inbox for next week's edition of the show. It is all about romance and incarceration, and we would love to hear your stories. Did jail, prison, or immigration detention ever stand between you and a romantic partner or partners? Does it now? Have you found love through the hardship? We would love to know your story. Email us embodied@wunc.org or DM us on Instagram or Twitter. We are at embodiedwunc. We build relationships on trust and love. For some, that's a commitment between two people. But today, we are talking with folks who have expanded their relationships beyond the binary. Having this conversation with me about polyamory is Crystal Bird Farmer, an educator, organizer, and the website editor of Black and Poly magazine, Natalie Murray, a licensed clinical mental health counselor, and Rob, a co-organizer of the Triangle Polyamory Meetup. So, Rob, we've been calling you just Rob, the show, and it's because you asked us to not use your last name. I would love to know a bit more about why. Are there particular fears that you have about folks in your life knowing that you are polyamorous?
Well, yeah, and I think all poly people, to some extent, will have that experience. Mm. I'm not worried about friends. It's another story. But, you know, anything from your family life, but more importantly, the career, work, job, it's, you know, you got to be, I mean, this is North Carolina. We're in the South.
Yeah,
it's,
certainly.
You know, it is what it is.
Certainly.
Yeah, just to be openly gay is or LGBTQ is, you know, a risk factor. So to try to add something that's even more outside the mainstream, you kind of put yourself in places that can get awkward and uncomfortable.
Well, tell me about, I mean, the ways that you navigate or don't polyamory relationships with other aspects of your life, maybe your parents or your family relationships. Is it something that you have conversations with folks about or something that you keep private?
It's more of a let's just not talk about it kind of thing. Mm. The situation with my family isn't local, so it's not like I see them all the time anyway, and that's probably a good thing. It's one thing if we're talking about my siblings or, you know, I have the cool gay uncle, you know, that kind of thing. I feel all right talking to them, you know, but with parents, it's like my mom probably knows, but so far, other than the partner that I currently live with, that's the only one that they're, you know, they're on, you know, first name basis with.
Yeah.
My other partner was a lot, the one I don't live with, he is extremely open about it because he sort of has that whole I've given up caring what other people think, you know, kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And I admire that part of him quite immensely. And I think it really all points down to where you are in your life. If you are a free agent, you're living your life as a, you know, as a ambitious young millennial in a big city, you know, and with no, you know, entanglements from your background, you might be much more able to open up to whoever you're talking to.
Yeah.
Likewise, you know, I sometimes meet couples who are married and they have kids and they've lived a somewhat monogamous life for a long time, and then they embrace polyamory later on. they obviously have lots of reasons to keep this quiet outside, you know. And I don't blame them for it. You know, if you need to be, so to call it, speak in the closet about being polyamorous, it's understandable in those types of situations. So it really is each individual's life, who you're with, you know, who's your family, you know, are you open at work? It all comes down to your own, you know, comfort zone. For me, you know, friends is the one thing I say that's non-negotiable, because if you are a friend, you are chosen family. Therefore, you should accept me regardless.
Crystal,
but everything else is a little more, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Crystal, I'm curious about for you. I know you have a daughter who is younger. How do you talk with her about your relationships? How much does she know?
Yeah, I'll just mention I'm in Gastonia. So, you know, I'm not living the big city life, but I am open to my friends and family about being poly. My daughter, you know, she knows how I relate to people. She's met several, I think she's met all my partners. You know, there's a lot of long distance partners that I have, but she's gone on trips with me. You know, she doesn't care. She's 9. You know, so she's used to me relating to people, and I hope that I'm showing her how to be healthy and how to communicate with people about your wants and needs. You know, I don't ask my partners to be her parent. You know, sometimes they will hang out with her, but that's just, you know, as a friend, you know, so they're not there to give her some discipline or to teach her anything like that. They're just people who are in my life and they care about her just like they care about me.
Has it been comfortable negotiating, or I guess, how comfortable do you feel talking about your relationship choices with other folks in her life? Maybe, I don't know, teachers or people at school? Like, is it something that comes up or something you feel like you have to confront or something you're able to keep private or negotiate in the way that you want to?
So, you know, it was a decision to be openly poly, you know, when I started running the Black and Poly website. That was several years ago. But now I actually am, I work at a school. A school that I co-founded with my mother. So, you know, part of that is the people, the parents and the community of the school kind of know me as an activist, as an educator. And so that's a part of how the school is, you know, is that these are some of the values we have, not that everybody should be polyamorous, but that we want children to grow up and learn how to have healthy relationships with boundaries and clear communication. So, you know, I'm not teaching people to be poly at the school. But yeah, I chose to kind of be open about it. So people know about it, people can ask me questions about it. And then of course, you know, when it comes to the internet, everything about my life is on the internet. So.
Yeah, internet is an open book. Natalie, I know you have to run to an appointment in just a minute, which is fitting. But I would love to just end on hearing any reflections you have on how your work with polyamorous folks has influenced how you think about your own relationships.
Well, my relationship is close. Always has been since I got married. But it's very interesting because before I got married, my husband and I, you know, always talked about, you know, the differences in relationships. And it's definitely something that he understands, but it's not in his wheelhouse. And that's fine. And it's just an example of being able to create the relationship you want that's specific to you. So I get that question a lot from my poly couples. They're like, are you in a poly relationship? And I'm like, no. Hmm. They're like, why not? Because I'm not with a partner who wants to be poly. So, you know, with that, what you were saying about disclosure as well. So it's one of those things when I tell people that I'm a sex therapist and that, you know, I do a lot of work with poly couples. I get all the questions about, you know, well, then why get married or why be with someone or whatever. And just to say that when people disclose to family or friends or their kids, I always ask them, so what is the goal for the disclosure? Why do you want to do that? Not that it's right or wrong, but I want you to be prepared for anything that happens as a result of. So, you know, there are some people who are just like, well, we all live together and, you know, people are coming over for Thanksgiving, so we need to let them know. Some people prefer definitely not to disclose. And I always let people know that there are people in your life that love and care about you that may understand but don't agree. I think sometimes with some of my poly couples, they feel like, well, if you understand, then you also have to agree, so this shouldn't be an issue for you. But I remind them that everybody's human. Everybody has the right to think and feel and, you know, anything that they want to. But as long as they are treating you with respect and kindness, then it's okay for them to understand but say, well, I don't really agree. And then y'all can move on and talk about, you know, Thanksgiving dinner or what to get somebody for Christmas. But yes, so my husband and I have a lot of conversations, you know, around poly relationships. And as far as affecting my relationship specifically, it really doesn't. But it's definitely great to have somebody, you know, on that same intellectual level who is, you know, just as open to having a conversation with you. So.
All right. Well, Natalie Murray, a licensed clinical mental health counselor, thank you so much for your time and for talking with us today.
Thank you. And I hope that everybody has a great day, great weekend. Great talking to everybody.
Thanks, Natalie. So still with me are Crystal Bird Farmer, website editor of Black and Poly Magazine, and Rob, the co-organizer of the Triangle Polyamory Meetup. And I'd love to end on this idea of finding community because, you know, as we've talked today, it's obvious that, you know, there are a lot of assumptions that people have about who is poly and how people define their relationships. And you all, as people who practice polyamory, don't owe anyone anything, don't owe anyone any, I guess, insight into your relationships that you don't feel comfortable with. But you know that, especially you, Crystal, like by writing publicly on the internet, you kind of open yourself up to questions. So I'm curious, I mean, what it is meant to find community, especially with other Black polyamorous folks, that feels good and affirming to you. Because I know a lot of the community spaces tend to not be super diverse, open polyamory community spaces.
Yeah, North Carolina, all of the major metro areas have polyamory groups. You know, it's harder now because of the pandemic, but, you know, it is good to be around people or to be able to communicate with people that you can ask questions. You know, there are people who have done polyamory for years and they can kind of help you through some of the basic questions and the struggles that every relationship has. So it's really important to do that. And, you know, for people of color and Black people, Indigenous people, it's really important to know that we have ways of being that we're not, you know, always represented in white culture. So, you know, Black people have their own kind of poly culture. And so that's what Black and Poly, the magazine and the website, is trying to represent and help people understand that, you know, we kind of have our own roots in this and there are ways that we can practice it that are in line with the way that we were raised and, you know, the values that we want to share with our families. And so, you know, that's an online space that has really connected people across the world just to find out more about polyamory and to learn how to practice it ethically.
Rob, you've organized a Facebook page that you referred to earlier in the show specifically for people who identify as gay or bisexual, polyamorous, and male. Tell me about why you wanted to create this specific community and establish a space for people to connect.
Well, yeah, that's in addition to my work with the Triangle Area Poly Meetup, which is open to all poly people in the Raleigh-Durham area, I, on the side, did a Facebook discussion page for gay and bi men who are in open relationships or poly or any other type of non-monogamy, simply because the needs are specific, you know, the type of discussions you have, whether it be, you know, safe sex practices or, you know, gay men. I found that open relationships are like as common as bread and butter, but polyamory is a whole nother concept. So being able to bridge that gap between those two for gay men was quite an interesting aspect of that discussion group. So I like the two groups, the ones who identify as poly and those who are just, you know, open relationship gays. They kind of have that nice little bridge to talk about the similarities and differences between those two types of non-monogamy. And it creates a good safe space community for them.
All right. We only have about a couple of minutes left in the show today. But Crystal, I would love to leave people with this idea of getting off of the relationship escalator, which is something that you talk about a lot in terms of the choice to be polyamorous. Tell us about what the relationship escalator is and how it can help us kind of rethink how we relate to people in our lives.
Yeah, so the relationship escalator is kind of the built-in assumption of monogamous relationships. It's, okay, so you're meeting and you're dating, and then you have to get more serious. So you move in together, and then people start asking, well, why aren't you married? So you get married, you have kids, you know, and then you grow old and die together. So that's the escalator. And monogamous assumptions are always that you have to continue riding that escalator until you die. When in reality, you can choose to get on and get off. You know, I can go up to a new partner and say, this is what I want to do with you. And they can say yes or no. Or I can say, you know, hey, I'm feeling a change in my availability and my wants and needs. So I want to maybe downgrade or do something different. And so that's how I take power over my relationships. And people can do this, whether they're monogamous or polyamorous, because it's all about taking away the assumptions of our culture and actually relating to people individually.
Crystal Bird Farmer is an educator, organizer, and the website editor of Black and Poly Magazine. Also with us today was Rob, a co-organizer of the Triangle Polyamory Meetup. Thanks so much to both of you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find more about the show and everyone we talked to today, as well as some links to resources and articles, all of that at our website, embodiedwunc.org. And the conversation does not end here. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at embodiedwunc. Embodied is produced by Kaya Finlay and edited by Amanda Magnus. Elikam Dodor is our intern. Jenny Lawson is our technical director. Al Widarski also helped engineer today's show. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Anita Rao, taking on the taboo with you.